On December 10, 1996, Dr. Jill Bolte Tay Taylor, a Harvard neuroanatomist at the pinnacle of her career, woke with a splitting headache that would change everything. Within hours, a blood vessel in her brain burst, flooding her left hemisphere and systematically shutting down her ability to speak, move, read, write, and recall her life. What makes this story extraordinary isn't just that Taylor survived, but that she observed her own stroke with the analytical precision of a scientist, even as her scientific mind was being dismantled. Her memoir became a global phenomenon after her 2008 TED Talk went viral, viewed over 27 million times, landing her on Time's 100 Most Influential People list and Oprah's Soul series. This rare account, from someone who understands both the neuroanatomy of stroke and the lived experience, offers profound insights not just about brain recovery, but about consciousness itself, revealing how our neural circuitry shapes our perception of reality and our sense of self. Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor's journey into neuroscience began with a deeply personal motivation, her brother's diagnosis with schizophrenia in his early 20s. Watching her once vibrant siblings struggle with mental illness ignited a passionate determination to understand the biological basis of brain disorders. She dedicated her career to brain research at Harvard Medical School's Brain Tissue Resource Center, one of the world's premier institutions for neurological study. There, she confronted what she termed the tissue issue, the critical shortage of brain donations for scientific research, a challenge that severely limited researchers' ability to study neurological conditions in depth. As the youngest person ever elected to the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI, Board of Directors, Taylor embarked on an ambitious nationwide campaign. She traveled extensively across America, speaking at medical conferences, support groups, and community centers, advocating for brain donation and working to destigmatize mental illness. Her youth and enthusiasm brought fresh energy to a field often shrouded in solemnity. Recognizing that traditional approaches to discussing brain donation often failed to resonate with the public, Taylor developed innovative outreach strategies. She created the persona of the singin' scientist, complete with a custom-made brain-shaped guitar and catchy original songs, including the memorable Brain Bank jingle. She used humor and music to break down barriers and make the subject more approachable. This unconventional advocacy proved remarkably effective, dramatically increasing annual brain donations from fewer than 3 to between 25 to 35 per year, providing crucial research materials for scientists studying various neurological conditions. In the laboratory, Taylor's scientific work was equally groundbreaking. She developed sophisticated techniques for simultaneously visualizing multiple neurotransmitter systems in brain tissue, a significant advancement that allowed researchers to better understand the complex interactions between different neural networks. Her innovative methods earned recognition from colleagues and established her as a rising star in the field of neuroanatomy. By December 1996, she had published several influential papers and was considered one of Harvard's most promising young researchers. What makes her subsequent stroke experience particularly valuable to both the scientific community and the general public is this unique combination of professional expertise and personal catastrophe. Few stroke victims possess the technical knowledge to understand the intricate biology of their condition. Conversely, few neuroanatomists experience firsthand the phenomena they study in the laboratory. This rare intersection created the conditions for extraordinary insight, a scientist studying her own brain from the inside out during one of the most profound neurological events a person can survive. Taylor's extensive background in neuroanatomy provided her with a sophisticated framework for understanding her experience that most stroke survivors lack. As her stroke progressed, she could identify specific brain regions and functions being compromised, correlating her subjective experience with the underlying neural mechanisms she had studied professionally. This scientist's perspective elevates her story beyond a mere medical memoir into a profound exploration of consciousness, identity, and the physical basis of our sense of self, offering unique insights into the relationship between brain function and human experience. To appreciate what happened during Taylor's stroke, we need to understand some basic brain biology. Our brain's blood supply follows predictable patterns through three main arteries: anterior, middle, and posterior cerebral arteries. Each artery supplies specific brain regions, creating distinct territories of influence. When specific branches are damaged, they cause predictable impairments. Taylor's stroke occurred in the territory of her left middle cerebral artery, affecting language centers like locus and Wernicke's areas, motor control regions, and zones crucial for analytical thinking and sequential processing. The brain's architecture reflects its evolutionary history, developing from the inside out like layers of an onion. The superficial cortical layers contain uniquely human neurons arranged in six distinct layers that enable abstract reasoning, complex language processing, and linear thinking, our most sophisticated cognitive abilities. These newer areas allow us to plan for the future, engage in mathematical thinking, and process complex social relationships. Deeper in the brain lies the limbic system, which we share with other mammals, processing emotions, instinctual responses, and vital functions like hunger and thirst. This system, sometimes called our reptilian brain, doesn't mature as we age, which explains why even sophisticated adults can still react emotionally like toddlers when triggered by stress or fear. Within this limbic system, the amygdala operates as our emotional sentinel, constantly scanning for threats and processing emotional memories. The hippocampus, shaped like a seahorse, handles learning and memory formation, converting short-term memories into long-term storage. When we perceive danger, our focus narrows to self-preservation, temporarily bypassing higher cognitive functions through a process called amygdala hijacking. This reveals a fundamental truth about our nature. While we like to think of ourselves as thinking creatures that feel, biologically, we are actually feeling creatures that think, with emotion often preceding rational thought. Our sensory systems detect energy at the atomic level, with each sensory pathway involving complex neural cascades that transform physical energy into electrical signals. The visual system alone processes millions of bits of information per second through multiple parallel pathways. When stroke damages these pathways, perception itself becomes altered in profound ways, affecting not just what we perceive, but how we make sense of the world. Stroke remains the leading cause of adult disability and the third leading killer in modern society, with left hemisphere strokes occurring 4 times more frequently than right hemisphere ones due to differences in arterial anatomy. Strokes come in 2 main varieties. Ischemic strokes, 83%, involve blood clots blocking vessels, while hemorrhagic strokes, 17%, involve bleeding into brain tissue. Both types can cause rapid cell death in affected areas, with approximately 2 million brain cells dying every minute during an acute stroke. Taylor's arteriovenous malformation, AVM, represented a rare form of hemorrhagic stroke that typically affects people in their prime years, often developing from birth but remaining silent until rupture. No two strokes produce identical symptoms because every brain is uniquely wired, with individual variations in neural organization and compensatory pathways. Understanding the different functions of our right and left hemispheres helps predict the deficits that occur with different types of stroke damage and guides recovery approaches. The left hemisphere typically specializes in language, sequential processing, and analytical thinking, while the right handles spatial awareness, emotional interpretation, and holistic thinking. This knowledge would prove crucial to Taylor's understanding of her own experience and eventual recovery, allowing her to leverage her intact right hemisphere functions while rebuilding left hemisphere capabilities. Our brain's hemispheres process information in fundamentally different ways, creating 2 distinct but complementary modes of consciousness. This understanding of hemispheric duality has evolved from Maynard Simon Dupuy's 1780 concept of homo duplex through Roger Sperry's Nobel Prize-winning split brain experiments in the 1960s. Modern neuroscience views the hemispheres not as separate entities, but as complementary partners, each contributing unique perspectives to our unified experience. This partnership is facilitated by the corpus callosum, a bundle of over 200 million nerve fibers connecting the two hemispheres. The right hemisphere functions as a parallel processor, creating rich sensory collages of the present moment. It excels at remembering isolated moments with remarkable clarity, but perceives no time beyond the immediate now. This hemisphere thinks outside conventional boundaries, fostering creativity and novel connections. For instance, it's the right hemisphere that enables us to appreciate metaphors, understand jokes, and recognize faces. It recognizes the fundamental similarities between all humans and enables empathy by perceiving our connection to others and the universe. The right hemisphere sees the big picture, our relationship to the whole, rather than focusing on individual parts, making it essential for spatial awareness and emotional intelligence. In contrast, the left hemisphere processes information sequentially, organizing details into linear sequences that create our sense of past, present, and future. It excels at categorization, language processing, and detailed analysis, making it crucial for activities like reading, writing, and mathematical computation. This hemisphere houses our ego center, defining our sense of self as separate from others. It creates automatic loops of thought patterns that allow rapid interpretation of experiences, makes judgments about what we like and dislike, and constantly compares us to others while celebrating our individuality. The left hemisphere generates our internal brain chatter, the constant verbal commentary that narrates our experiences, which can manifest as both productive self-talk and destructive rumination. Despite their differences, these hemispheres collaborate in nearly every action we take. In language processing, for example, the left handles grammar, vocabulary, and literal meaning, while the right interprets tone, context, and nonverbal cues. When reading a novel, the left hemisphere decodes the words, while the right hemisphere creates vivid mental imagery and emotional connections. The left hemisphere defines outbody's boundaries, while the right orients it in space. This collaboration is evident in activities like playing music, where the left hemisphere processes rhythm and sequential finger movements, while the right hemisphere contributes to emotional expression and overall musical interpretation. This hemispheric specialization would become dramatically evident during Taylor's stroke, as damage to her left hemisphere temporarily silenced its functions while leaving her right hemisphere intact, creating a profound shift in her consciousness that would forever change her understanding of the brain and the self. This experience would provide unprecedented insights into the distinct roles of each hemisphere and their contribution to our conscious experience, challenging traditional views about brain organization and consciousness. At 7 a.m. on December 10, 1996, Taylor awoke to a sharp pain behind her left eye, the first warning of the catastrophe unfolding in her brain. Attempting to continue her morning routine, she stepped onto her cardio glider for exercise, but experienced a profound sense of dissociation, feeling detached from her body while watching herself move as if from a distance. Her coordination became increasingly jerky, her balance impaired, and ordinary sounds became disturbingly amplified. As a neuroanatomist, she recognized these as serious neurological symptoms affecting her brainstem, but her ability to think clearly was rapidly deteriorating. Her verbal thoughts became fragmented and interrupted by stretches of silence as blood from her hemorrhage poured over her brain's language centers. What happened next reveals something remarkable about consciousness. As her analytical left brain functions shut down, Taylor's awareness shifted from external reality to an internal focus on her cellular existence. Despite the mortal danger she faced, she experienced a strange euphoria and sense of expansiveness, feeling connected to the energy around her and freed from the boundaries of her normal identity. Standing in the shower, a tingling sensation suddenly surged through her chest and throat, shocking her back to momentary clarity with the terrifying awareness that she was in grave danger. Despite her compromised cognition, she managed to dress herself, moving mechanically in slow motion. When her right arm suddenly dropped paralyzed against her side, the scientist in her recognized the unmistakable sign. She was having a stroke. Remarkably, Taylor experienced both alarm and fascination, viewing her stroke as an unprecedented opportunity to study brain function from the inside. This professional curiosity persisted even as her cognitive abilities deteriorated further. Looking in the mirror, she experienced a profound realization that her body was merely a temporary vessel for her consciousness, not her fundamental identity. Even as her condition worsened, her left hemisphere's ego maintained the illusion of control, arrogantly believing she would recover completely. She remembers thinking she would do this stroke for a week before returning to her busy schedule, a notion that reveals how our left brain constructs narratives to maintain our sense of agency even in crisis. This cognitive dissonance, simultaneously recognizing the gravity of her situation while believing she could simply schedule her recovery, illustrates the complex interplay between our brain's reality assessment systems and our psychological need for control. As her left hemisphere's language centers and time perception shut down, Taylor underwent a profound transformation in consciousness. She shifted from what she calls doing consciousness to being consciousness, experiencing only the beautiful present moment without past regrets or future anxieties. Her moments became open-ended rather than broken into discrete instances, flowing one into another without clear boundaries. Her self-concept transformed dramatically. Without her left hemisphere's boundary-defining function, she no longer perceived herself as a solid entity separate from her environment, but as fluid energy connected to the universe around her. The absence of her left brain's constant judgment and comparison freed her from self-criticism. For perhaps the first time since childhood, she experienced herself as perfect, whole, and beautiful exactly as she was. Her visual processing changed fundamentally. Everything blended together in a flow of energy where she couldn't distinguish physical boundaries between objects or perceive three-dimensionality. Colors no longer appeared distinct, and the concept of separation itself became meaningless, making it impossible to perceive physical or emotional loss. Despite the trauma happening to her body, she felt a profound peace and calmness, though she later worried about fitting into society with no fear. In the hospital's neurological intensive care unit, she experienced people as concentrated packages of energy rather than separate individuals. She became highly empathetic, reading volumes from facial expressions and body language despite not understanding words. She noticed how some caregivers brought her energy while others depleted it, an observation that would later inform her recommendations for healthcare providers. Communication became extraordinarily difficult. Processing a simple question like, "Who is the President of the United States?" required enormous effort, as she had to translate sounds into pictures, making her responses extremely slow. Her thinking process relied entirely on images, rather than language. She couldn't move from general concepts to specific details without exhausting herself exploring countless visual possibilities. Taylor found the medical community ill-equipped to communicate with stroke patients, particularly those with left hemisphere damage affecting language. Despite her condition, she retained vast knowledge, but needed to discover new pathways to access it, a process that would define her recovery journey and inform her insights about neuroplasticity and brain rehabilitation. Communication became extraordinarily difficult. Processing a simple question like, "Who is the President of the United States?" required enormous effort, as she had to translate sounds into pictures, making her responses extremely slow. Her thinking process relied entirely on images rather than language. She couldn't move from general concepts to specific details without exhausting herself exploring countless visual possibilities. Taylor found the medical community ill-equipped to communicate with stroke patients, particularly those with left hemisphere damage affecting language. Despite her condition, she retained vast knowledge, but needed to discover new pathways to access it, a process that would define her recovery journey and inform her insights about neuroplasticity and brain rehabilitation. Taylor's mother, whom she affectionately calls Gigi, arrived at the hospital and instinctively understood her needs, crawling into bed to hold her like an infant, a moment Taylor considered her first and greatest blessing. This simple act of physical comfort proved more healing than any medical intervention, highlighting the profound importance of human connection in recovery. During a medical conference at her bedside, doctors explained that her hemorrhage was caused by an arteriovenous malformation, AVM, requiring surgical removal. Despite her initial refusal to have her head cut open, she eventually agreed after her mother promised unconditional support through the recovery process. Taylor made remarkable progress in the days following her stroke, intuitively breaking recovery into small, achievable steps, rocking before rolling, rolling before sitting up, celebrating each success with restorative sleep. By day 4, she could sit, stand, and walk with assistance, though her speech remained weak and labored. Her cognitive improvements showed fascinating glimpses of her brain's adaptability, as when she cleverly memorized test items or attempted to cheat on counting tests, demonstrating her brain's ability to compensate for damaged areas. After release from the hospital, everyday environments became overwhelming. Grocery stores were particularly challenging due to fluorescent lighting, information overload from product labels, and negative reactions from impatient shoppers. She relied on her mother as a guide, following her like a baby duck to relearn basic life skills. Simple tasks became complex cognitive challenges. At the laundromat, she struggled with basic math concepts, not understanding what's a one when asked about addition. Money was as incomprehensible as a foreign currency. The dryer dance of removing clothes while keeping the machine running overwhelmed her completely, triggering feelings of confusion and desperation. Despite these challenges, she celebrated a meaningful Christmas with her mother and friend Kelly before facing brain surgery. Determined to express gratitude, she managed to type a thank you letter to supporters using both hands, engaging both hemispheres, though she couldn't read what she'd written afterward. Before surgery, she fulfilled her wish to visit the Fellsway Woods, a sacred personal retreat where she could spread my arms in the breeze and feel the replenishment of my life force power. The surgery on December 27, 1996, was successful. Though concerned about her appearance, asking the doctor not to leave her totally bald, she awoke feeling a renewed brightness and emotional engagement that had been absent since the stroke. After 5 days in the hospital, she returned home as a stroke survivor, beginning the long journey of rebuilding her life and identity. Taylor frames recovery as a decision I had to make a million times a day, constantly choosing whether to engage with the external world or remain in the ecstatic bliss of her right hemisphere. This insight reveals recovery not as a passive process, but as an active choice requiring tremendous will and determination. She passionately challenges the medical notion that stroke recovery plateaus after 6 months, noting her own brain showed significant improvement for 8 full years. Drawing on neuroplasticity principles, she compares neurons to playground children who adapt to changing circumstances. If you wipe out a neuron's genetically programmed function, then those cells will either die from lack of stimulation or they will find something new to do. This perspective offers hope to stroke survivors and their families, suggesting recovery timelines are far more flexible than traditionally believed. Sleep emerges as perhaps the most critical recovery factor. Taylor describes sleep as essential filing time for her brain, which became rapidly overwhelmed by sensory input. She advocates strongly against conventional rehabilitation approaches that force patients to stay awake on rigid schedules, believing her recovery depended on sleep, 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 and more sleep, interspersed with periods of learning and cognitive challenge. Her experience reveals profound insights about consciousness itself. As biological creatures with neural networks that strengthen with repeated use, we can consciously choose which thought patterns to reinforce. When emotions surge through us, we have the power to choose which emotional loops to engage with after the initial 90 seconds of biochemical response. For mental well-being, we must monitor how much time we spend caught in negative emotions. The focused human mind is our most powerful instrument, with our left brain capable of directing or impeding physical healing. Deep inner peace is always available, just a thought away, not because life is always blissful, but because we can access blissfulness amid chaos through our right brain circuitry. Taylor's most profound insight may be about identity itself. She discovered that our fundamental nature transcends our cognitive functions. Even as language, memory, and analytical thinking were stripped away, something essential remained. she came to see her mind as a sacred patch of cosmic real estate she was entrusted to tend. Though she inherited certain neural patterns, thanks to neuroplasticity, she could nurture circuits she wanted to grow while pruning those she preferred to live without. Taylor's experience offers a rare window into the nature of consciousness and the physical basis of our sense of self. Her stroke temporarily silenced the brain circuits that create our narrative identity, the story we tell ourselves about who we are, revealing a more fundamental awareness beneath these constructions. This insight has profound implications for how we understand ourselves and others. If our sense of separateness is largely a creation of our left hemisphere, then our fundamental nature may be more connected and unified than our everyday experience suggests. Taylor describes accessing a consciousness where boundaries dissolved, and she experienced herself as energy flowing with the universe, a state remarkably similar to what contemplative traditions have described for millennia. For stroke survivors and their caregivers, Taylor's journey offers practical wisdom about recovery. She emphasizes being loved for who she might become rather than who she had been. Though her essence remained, her brain circuitry had fundamentally changed, bringing new interests and perspectives that required acceptance. She needed people to focus on her abilities, not disabilities, celebrating every small triumph to inspire further progress. Breaking tasks into manageable steps, teaching with endless patience, and approaching her with positive energy were all crucial to her healing. Her experience challenges us to reconsider how we interact with those experiencing neurological challenges. The medical community often focuses narrowly on physical recovery while overlooking the profound shifts in consciousness and perception that accompany brain injury. Taylor's account suggests that understanding these experiential dimensions is essential for truly supporting recovery. Perhaps most importantly, her journey reveals the extraordinary plasticity of the human brain. Even after catastrophic injury, our neural networks can reorganize and rebuild, finding new pathways to restore function. This plasticity extends beyond recovery from injury. It suggests that all of us, through conscious attention to our thought patterns, can reshape our neural architecture throughout our lives. Taylor remains motivated to share her story, inspired by those who showed her unconditional love during recovery, by the desperate young woman trying to understand why her mother hadn't called 911 during her fatal stroke, by the elderly gentleman worried his comatose wife had suffered, and by countless caregivers seeking direction and hope. Her experience reminds us that within the fragility of our biological existence lies an astonishing resilience, and perhaps glimpses of a consciousness that transcends the physical brain itself.